For a long time, I've been a fan of the filmmaker Ramin Barani, going back to his first feature films, Man, Push, Cart in 2005, then Goodbye Solo in 2008, movies that prompted Roger Ebert to call Ramin the new great American director. I pay attention to what Ramin makes. But when I heard about a documentary he'd made about the challenge of getting good health care in rural Appalachia, and that the name of the movie came from a John Prine lyric, I leaned in more. I grew up in West Virginia and started out my journalism career there. And the people in this documentary, called If Dreams Were Lightning, are familiar to me, like Marty Bolin.
I've been a coal miner for a little over 30 years. I'm a fourth generation coal miner. My dad's dad worked, and my dad, and then there's four boys. I have black lung disease and what they call rockosis, which from the coal dust and the rock dust underground. I mean, I had health insurance up till the day, you know, I got disabled, and that's cut off. That's just their policy. Now I've got some Medicare. It pays 80%.
Who pays for the 20%?
I struggle to pay for it. Struggle badly to pay for it.
The documentary also features two women who run a mobile health clinic, Teresa Owens Tyson and Paula Hill Collins. And as soon as I saw them, I knew I needed to talk to them. They are both totally glam. Teresa has white blonde hair. Paula has this dark raven hair. And they're both usually totally done up. And they drive this hulking RV-like truck through mountain switchbacks to bring health care to people who otherwise wouldn't get it.
Our patient population here, they're very proud, and they will not go to the ER. They die.
Because they don't have the money to pay it.
They know they can't pay it.
Well, Mac, if you want to come on back here, and we'll get your, okay. I want to take a look at that.
You did a good service to our country, but it took a toll on your body, didn't it?
They call the mobile clinic the Health Wagon. Teresa and Paula have been best friends since they were 14. They've worked together through divorce and remarriage, after the death of Paula's adult son, through the opioid epidemic and the continued economic contraction in this part of the country.
We think of this honestly as our calling.
Yeah.
And I really do feel like it was a mission on our life. And I know my grandmother, when we were little, and she would read the book of Esther, and she would say, you know, for the moment, this is the moment for which you've been prepared. And she would say, you'd never know what situation God is going to put you in, and that he's going to expect you to step up.
This is Death, Sex, and Money, the show from Slate about the things we think about a lot and need to talk about more. I'm Anna Sale.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Can I run to the bathroom before we get started? Because it is 90 minutes, Paula. And Paula, you may want to run to the bathroom.
Yeah, we're going to tape for about 90 minutes. Do you need to run to the restroom, Paula?
Well, I guess Teresa thinks I need to go. She knows me.
Teresa Owens Tyson is in charge of the Health Wagon. So when she tells you to go, you go. Paula Hill Collins is the Health Wagon's clinical director. They work a lot, but they make time to talk to reporters. They need more attention and money to do what they do. That's the main message of Ramin Barani's new documentary, If Dreams Were Lightning, Rural Healthcare Crisis. It's a tight 26 minutes about rural communities where people have long not had money to cover all their healthcare costs and how access is getting harder as small rural hospitals go bankrupt, making care even more difficult to get to. What makes this film special, though, is the people Ramin introduces you to. They're funny, self-effacing. When they talk about something hard, it's often with a slight smile, kind of like a John Prine song.
PBS really wanted the title to be something like, rural healthcare in America is a crisis or something very literal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I felt that the movie was not really about that only, it was something else. And that line from Angel from Montgomery came to my mind. I mean, it's one of his most famous songs, and it had the word dreams in it. The whole lyric, I mean, if dreams were lightning and thunder were desire, this old house would have burned down a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
It just seemed to capture the spirit of it.
Before this documentary, Ramin directed The White Tiger for Netflix, which was nominated for a screenwriting Oscar, and Fahrenheit 451, an HBO series with Michael B. Jordan that was nominated for 5 Emmys. He's pals with Werner Herzog and premieres films at the Cannes and Venice Film Festivals. And I wanted to know, how'd making this small doc about healthcare challenges in Appalachia fit into all that?
I'd been reading a lot about healthcare in rural communities, specifically in the South, and I wanted to get back out there. I was born and raised in North Carolina, and this specific place had been so rooted in my childhood and in my dad that I thought I might discover something going down there that was maybe personal, but also unknown to way too many of us, including me.
Mm. When you were growing up, how did you understand what your dad's job was?
Well, he was a doctor, and he would visit a few times a month a clinic up in the mountains, and he would sometimes take my brother and I up there on those kind of windy mountain roads that you know very well, often very foggy, and then we would get to the clinic and sit in that waiting room, and, you know, back then, this is North Carolina, so, you know, it was like, I could still smell and taste the cigarette smoke. And,
very, you know, much land of tobacco back then.
Yeah. That was, you would go to Kroger and, you know, the fruit, it was all covered in smoke. You know? So I think it was a lot about, it started to become about wondering who the people were today that my dad had been seeing in my childhood. And my dad comes from the South in Iran, and for some reason, the South in other countries is often the same. And so he comes from a country place in Iran, from a small village. So he was always more comfortable with country people in North Carolina. Even in Winston-Salem, which is a city, his patients were nearly always working class, blue collar. He just felt more comfortable around that milieu, and so I think there's a symbiotic feeling with him, with that community.
And how would he describe why he felt that kind of comfort?
I think he just, it's what he was comfortable with because it's very much more close to his background growing up.
Uh-huh.
You know, he was quite young when his dad died. His dad was killed in some incident out in the rural landscapes in the south of Iran. And so it was his mom who raised everybody and his older brother.
Hmm.
And he tells a story about his mom, who was a religious person and would stand with the holy book in her hand, the Quran in her hand. And my dad always thought, wow, my mom is reading this book every day, all the time. And she would sometimes recite passages to him. But when he got older, he realized, in fact, no, she was actually illiterate. And she had memorized certain pages and just liked to hold it and to recite things. And I think, you know, didn't want to reveal exactly what her literacy was, and he discovered it when he was a little older.
Huh.
And so, you know, I think pretty similar to country here, there's a lot of kind of ways of being and proverbs and sayings that are passed down from generation to generation that kind of gives you a moral compass and a way of coping. And I think between that and literature, I think those were his guiding forces in how to talk with his patients.
Ramin's production team put us in touch with Paula and Teresa, and we scheduled a time to meet for a video call from their separate offices at the Health Wagon's headquarters in Wise, Virginia, population 2,900.
You might want to put a sign on your door, Paula, if you didn't.
Well, I did, but they ignored it anyway.
Paula ate lunch at her desk while we talked. It was immediately clear that getting uninterrupted time at work was not easy.
Like a couple of weeks ago, I fell on suite bathroom right here, and I was like, oh, you know, I was in there, and they was like banging on the door. I mean, like, people. It's like, we know you're in there, you know, let us in. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Wow. I know what that's like because I have a 5 and a 7-year-old at home, but that doesn't usually happen to me at work.
Yeah, that's the way it is. Like, you know, like, yeah, like being a mom and you never get to go to the bathroom by yourself. That's the way it is here. I mean, it's.
The Health Wagon runs multiple stationary clinics and around a dozen different mobile sites. They work across 6 counties in the western tip of Virginia that juts in between Kentucky and Tennessee. The Appalachian and Blue Ridge Mountains carve up the landscape here into remote but tightly packed communities. Coal mining was big here, but the number of coal jobs in Virginia has declined by half from 2012 to 2022. There are high rates of military service in this part of Virginia and poverty.
Uninsured and underinsured is our focus because there is so many people, individuals with high copays, high deductibles, and that is prohibitive. And even if you have the luxury of having insurance, oftentimes it's for catastrophic purposes only anymore. You've got such high deductibles. And along with that, you know, you may not have eye care services where you can get your eyes examined, eyeglasses, or dental. And so that is the reason that we really bring a comprehensive mix of, care.
Yeah, and if you have insurance, most of the time you're looking at $75 copay when you go to the doctor, sometimes $150, more depending on what you're seeing. That's a lot of money out of minimum wages. I think in Virginia it's going up to $13.50, but right now it's still right at $12 an hour. In today's economy, that's not a lot. And that's one of the difficulties we have is every time the minimum wage goes up, then the cost of living goes up. And it's just like the government will not let us get ahead sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So how many hours a week do you think you work, Teresa?
60 plus. And then it's for 31 years.
31 years?
Yeah.
Has it always been about 60 hours a week?
Yes, it really has. It is, this job is not for everyone. I mean, it takes a lot of time and energy to roll out we've got over 74 programs that we have here that we
and
have.
We have a very small staff. And like probably, Teresa, like when we have our large summer event, like on that Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we have to be there from the time the doors open. And at that time, they usually open the doors at 6, but people would begin lining up like a week or so before. And we used to let them spend the night, and then I think it was like regulations. They said you couldn't and you would have to leave. Well, when that first came into context, I'm just a big chicken. So Teresa had to go meet this mob of people, and I thought they were going to jump her. I mean, it was really like everybody got so upset because they were that desperate for health care.
Yeah.
That was the issue. They were that desperate for health care, and they were so afraid someone was going to get their spot, and they wouldn't get their glasses made. They wouldn't get their dental care. And my ex-husband, this isn't why we divorced, but I will never forget, he told me one time, he came up there and he said, I would pull my own teeth before I would stand in line here for days. And I said, well, that's because this isn't your only option. You know, you can say that. It's easy to say that.
Uh-huh.
But if you've never been in that situation. But I said, that kind of told his heart, because we're divorced now.
These lines, they form at health fairs and mobile clinics the Health Wagon sets up to deliver care. There's more need than they can meet. And they have felt the stakes of not having care when you need it. Paula's son died at 29 after an accident, something Paula attributes to delays in emergency care. Paula and Teresa worked alongside each other through that loss and through everything else in their adult lives. Actually, from before they were adults, back to when they were in high school together.
We got our bachelor's at East Tennessee State University, our master's from the University of Kentucky, and we have our doctorate in nursing practice from the University of Alabama. So we have graduated, including high school, 4 times together.
And growing up in the families that you grew up in, was the expectation that you were going to go to school and get a number of degrees when you were?
It was. It was for me. Our moms are so close, and my mom was a school teacher. So neither one of us had a choice. I mean, she was actually the one that kept saying, you have to go get your doctorate, you have to go get your doctorate, you have to get that terminal degree. Hmm. And she would always say, even though she didn't have that, she would always say, I want you to go to school and get your education so you don't have to depend on anybody. Hmm. And my grandfather, he died before I was born, but he was like the most wonderful man ever. But she still wanted us to have that independence. And she wanted all of her daughters to have that because I think she still felt dependent upon him, if that makes sense.
And that was my mother. I mean, my mother, she only had like a sixth grade education, but she was very, very fiercely independent and still is. She's still with me. She is 83. And, you know, she always told me, you know, get your education. You depend on yourself. You never depend on anyone else. And, you know, my father, he was a coal miner, and they had four children, and they made sure that we all four were, you know, college graduates because, I think that they knew that was the only way in, you know, out of really.
The only thing anybody could not take away from you.
Well, I want to just underscore and I want to make sure I understand when you say, like, your education is something nobody can take away from you. What I hear you saying is you were taught from a young age as girls that, like, get your education and a man can't take it away from you, and also an employer like a coal company that decides to leave town can't take it away from you.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because we are here. I mean, you have to think, I think it goes along now that you said this, I'm just picturing this. We always say that our economy is one of extraction. Mm-hmm. So they were used to people taking things away.
Mm. So we don't want to ever put our ourselves in that position where we could be, you know, compromised due to, finances or limited financial resources, you know, in the area.
And I want to understand the way, like, kind of the environment that you try to create for patients. When you show up at a site, I'm imagining that you the patients that you find there are really excited to have somewhere to go. But maybe also I'm imagining it's sometimes a patient population that doesn't always feel comfortable going into a doctor's office.
There is a lot of, mistrust because, as we talked about, it's, you know, very vulnerable population. It is a population that's had a lot of moral injury, extractive economy. People have long taken advantage of the people in the Appalachian region. And then, I mean, as of late, I mean, we have seen, you know, with the targets from the drug companies with the substance, you know, people, individual substance use disorder, you know, that the drug companies, they know where the number one disability rates are. They're here in, you know, they're here in the Appalachian Mountains. Coal mining is a very labor-intensive industry. You know, we have some of the top disability rates in the nation. So they know where to target it at. So,
pain pills.
For pain pills.
Starting with OxyContin in the 90s, pain pills took hold here, and their use grew and grew, pushed along by pharmaceutical companies and their aggressive marketing. If you've read Demon Copperhead or watched the series Dope Sick on Hulu, those are based in this part of the country, where it's just another version of a familiar story. The money made here leaves. All the costs stick around.
And so again, the people just as of late have again been taken, you know, advantage of. So the people are mistrust. And so they have to see when we're engaging with the patients on that level, they have to see our heart. They have to see the compassion that Paul and I show them and our other providers. Mm. We hug our patients. We cry with our patients. We pray with our patients. They know that we're real. So when we tell them that maybe that news that maybe they do not want to hear or something that they don't want to hear, I do think that we've engendered that trust.
And I would say, at least two or three times a week, I have patients say the words to me, I know you care. I know you care about me. Mm. And Teresa and I try to tell them, you know, here, let me show you what's showing on your EKG. Let me show you your labs. Now, we can get you in with a specialist here, or we're going to be having this clinic. I want you to get this seen about because I care about you. I'm worried. I'm scared. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll say, you've got those babies you've got to look after. Mm-hmm. I think we give them hope that, okay, you know, I've got to keep working, but okay, they're going to help me get my blood pressure down, so maybe I can keep working. You know, they're going to, you know, you come in, your blood pressure is stroke level, and we're not just, okay, here's you a $500 prescription, go get it filled. Trace and I, because it's in us, we get on the phone and we start calling and saying, do you have samples? Can we get some here? Okay, let's see if we can, you know, what we can do to make sure they get their medicine covered.
Yeah. I love that when you're starting a difficult conversation, you start with explaining their labs to them and explaining the charts, because so often that just gets skipped over in a health clinic that's overbooked and they don't have time. And
They do. I mean, you know, we'll get people's emergency, you know, room records. Maybe they've presented at the emergency room, you know, and they'll go in maybe for their gallbladder, and then they'll, you know, we get the records and we'll like look at it and okay, well, there's a lung mass here. Did anybody tell you about that? We weren't told about that. We see that quite often, but yeah, I think showing them something that is concrete, and then you know, and then giving them the resources, you know, to deal with that issue, because we never leave a patient alone. Everybody here to the Health Wagon, they essentially check out with like a social worker, because the social determinants of health are very important to us.
Mm. You know, I just want to mention, it's interesting speaking with you both. The pace at which you speak is fast. And I can't tell. I sometimes think, Teresa, you're trying to speak quickly so Paula doesn't interrupt you.
That's a lot. Yes, she does.
And then I also just when I was listening to you there, I wonder, like, are you speaking quickly because you feel there's this pressure to capture when someone's paying attention?
Yes.
To make sure you get to say what you need to say.
I do. I mean, people say that we talk like we're from not the accent, but we talk like we're from New York. We've got a lot to say. We've got, you know, a short time to say it in. So we try to talk as fast as we can to anybody that will listen so that they better understand the plight of the beautiful people here in Appalachia.
Coming up, why Paula and Teresa, with their plates already full, decided to get trained up on giving Botox. In last week's episode, a few of my new coworkers and Slate and I got together to give advice to listeners going through a life transition. We heard from those of you contemplating a career change, a second child, a move across the country, a lot of high-stakes life change packed into 60 minutes. But the thing about advice is, it's not a hard science. And I know the feeling of listening to an advice podcast and screaming, "You're missing the point!" And we heard from a lot of listeners who felt like our answer to the question about whether to go from one to two kids was off. Catherine in Chicago is a listener with an only child, and she pushed back on Mark Joseph Stern's perhaps too extended riff on selfish only children. Catherine told us about a traumatic birth experience that made having more children impossible. She wrote, "It's just so unhelpful to have to fight against and protect our children against even playful suggestions that two children is some kind of magical, joyful number that we're all secretly seeking." And another listener pointed out, if you are not able to rise to the challenge of two kids, you might end up having children with negative behaviors too. There are so many decisions that go into this, and talking about how nice it is to give your kids siblings is really not the way to decide. Thank you for this feedback. And to be clear, all kidding aside, our official position at Death, Sex, and Money is that perfect families look a lot of different ways. With a kid or not, multiple kids or not, partnered or not, chosen, biological, and extended. And these families take shape by our own choosing and by forces we can't control. The ideal, I believe, is for all of us to cultivate a circle of care with families with different structures and at different stages, so we can each give each other backup as we move through gauntlets of all kinds. We also received a lot of lovely notes and suggestions for the listener we called Tom, who had to give up driving because of a seizure disorder, and we're forwarding your notes along to him. We also set up a call for Tom and I to talk with Anna Zivarts, a disability advocate and author of a new book about adjusting to life when you have lost or never had the ability to drive. The book's called When Driving Is Not an Option. You can hear Anna and Tom in conversation in a bonus episode that we are dropping in your feed on Friday. Here's a bit of that conversation.
If you take everyone who can't drive, it's about 30% of the population. There's a lot of us, but there's so much shame in not driving, right? Or not being able to afford to drive, that it's not something we really talk about.
I don't feel any shame at all. For me, I'm just angry and brewing and stewing.
You can get that bonus episode by being a subscriber to Slate Plus. If you have not already subscribed, you can do it two ways. You can go to the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts and just hit try free, or go to slate.com/DSM Plus to get this special subscriber-only conversation. Thanks to all of you for being in touch. You can send us your ideas, stories, and feedback anytime at deathsexmoney@slate.com. Hungry Root is the easiest way to eat healthy. They send you fresh, high-quality groceries, simple recipes, and essential supplements. It's like having a personal assistant for healthy living. And it's easy to do. You take a short quiz about your or your family's health goals, what you like to eat, and then you get this personalized cart with groceries for the week along with recipe recommendations, and it's good food. Fresh produce, high-quality meat and seafood. And then when you get it, you feel so smart and your life is easier. That's how I felt after my box arrived. Because look at me, I have already done my weekly meal planning and grocery shopping, and I don't have any of those dreaded weeknights where all of a sudden it's dinner time again and I don't have a plan. Right now, Hungry Root is offering Death, Sex, and Money listeners 40% off your first delivery and free veggies for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/DSM to get 40% off your first delivery and get your free veggies. That's hungryroot.com/DSM. Don't forget to use our link so they know we sent you. Spring is the best time to start a new workout routine. It's our yearly collective warm-up. For me, that means I'm adding some more movement outside, running in the neighborhood and hiking with the dogs. And for days when I'm really feeling ambitious, a little HIIT workout training to get my heart rate up. And Peloton can accompany you as you restart or change up your regular workouts. Peloton accommodates your schedule, even if you only have 5 minutes. Peloton has classes for you, giving you the flexibility you need to move your body. And Peloton makes the process easier with personalized recommendations and guided programs that take the guesswork out of working out. So you can jump right in, keeping your fitness journey fresh every day so you won't get bored and give up. Whether you prefer to run outdoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com. This episode is brought to you by Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he will chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts. This is Death, Sex, and Money from Slate. I'm Anna Sale. Paula, I want to ask you about your son, if that's okay.
It's fine.
Paula's son, David Shane, was the operations director at the Health Wagon. In 2019, when he was 29, he died after an accident. I understand he died as a result of a fall in 2019. Mm-hmm. Was it like a workplace injury, or what happened?
No, he was home. We had left on, it was the day before Christmas, and everything was fine. And he was worried. He paced a lot. We were both pacers. And sometime during the night, he got up and fell against the dresser. And his girlfriend that was living with him wasn't medical, and she didn't know. And he went back to sleep. And we didn't know anything about it until she called me the next morning and said she couldn't get him to wake up. And I'm like, you can't what?
They rushed him to a nearby hospital, a good one, Paula says. But it was Christmas Eve. They had less staff than usual, and they had to wait for initial treatment to his head injury. Paula called another doctor, a friend, who works at the University of Virginia Hospital in Charlottesville, more than 4.5 hours away.
He actually told me from the very beginning there would have been a different outcome if we had been closer to UVA.
Hmm.
And when you know being here may have cost my son his life, because that's what he was saying, they would have immediately taken him. It wouldn't have just been one doctor on call. They would have had a team. And he actually, that's what he was so upset about. And he's being human. He is one of the best doctors. He actually, and he was been a friend to us for 20-some years. He actually went to counseling himself after my son died. Because that reality bothered him so much, didn't it, Teresa? And he would tell anybody that. He said, I had to go. And he told me that. And he said, I just want to tell you that later. He said, I know. And him being the way he is, I think he saw such an injustice to see someone so young that's life could have possibly been saved if he had been somewhere else besides where he was, besides here.
What was it like to work together after that? Like, what was it like to work through that? You've known each other for so long, and what a sudden, devastating loss. Like, how, Teresa, what was it like?
I mean, for me, I mean, you know, I know that there's nothing that it's, you feel, you know, as a friend, you just feel really helpless. You know, it's, you know, the most unimaginable thing happened to her. And all I can do is, you know, listen, because I can't change anything. I can't bring him back. And not that there's any silver lining that can even be found, but I, you know, I know that David was such, he was such a great operations director here. I mean, I'm a type of person, I don't believe that we're just like going to float around on clouds in heaven and eat grapes or something like that. I think that God has a purpose for us, and there's work to be done. And David had some skill sets that God needs, you know, because, I mean, Jesus said that he went away to prepare a place for us and, you know, that we could go there.
And do you, as the operations director, he worked with you all, like, do you still use systems that he set up? Do you see his handwriting around from time to time?
We do. He put so much into the decision with the clinic here. He was very business-oriented, very money-oriented, and he was like, okay, we need to take, you know, other clinics are doing this. We need to take and go take a donation, like the $10. So when he first, other free clinics were doing this, and we were like, oh, I don't know, David Shane, I just don't think that will work out. But you know what? Our patients actually want to do that, and he saw that. He said they will buy into it, and they did, and it actually pays for one person's salary.
You call him David Shane, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. And David Shane, that he suggested that there was an optional way to contribute to patients that they wanted to pay that $10.
Uh-huh.
To me, that kind of speaks to both a financial reality for the clinic, but also dignity.
That's it. And that's where he was going with. He said, you will see. He said, they buy into it. And he said, it's not like you're giving them something. He said, they will feel like they're a part of it and they're helping it to grow. And really, we've had very few resistance to it, haven't we, Teresa?
Right.
Because we do have a very prideful and a very proud sort of people here.
Yeah. Well, speaking of dignity, and this is going to perhaps seem like a jarring transition, I'm going to warn you, but speaking of dignity, I really liked finding out that you offer Botox to people.
We do. That's our fun thing that we do. We actually started out doing it with each other, okay?
Okay, tell me about this. Okay, like what do you mean with each other? Like you injected each other?
We went out and we trained in Beverly Hills. Now, we're going to do training. We try to train with the best. I mean, that's the way that we are because we are overachievers, so we want to train with the best. And so we were out in Beverly Hills. We had never been to Beverly Hills before. So, you know, we finished up our training at about 5 o'clock, barely, you know, any lunch, you know, sometimes at these little conferences that you do. And we were so hungry. And the last thing that we got to do was we did lip filler on each other. You know, you got to practice on somebody. Paula got to practice on me. I got to practice on Paula. And so we went out and
and one of the things you're not supposed to do is get in the hot sun.
Yeah, the hot sun is not good for just having lips that are filled. And so we go out to eat, and, you know, we're there on Rodeo Drive, and our lips, we go and eat, and they just start like, oh, like, you know.
And we did take some good pictures beforehand, probably the best pictures we ever took.
Yeah, our pictures did look good, but they just like balloon up like this. And I mean, I had ordered like a sap. I couldn't even like get in my mouth.
Wait, you had like a puffy duck lips? Because
yeah, puffy duck lips.
It was a duck lip that you could, except we couldn't move because it was just, you know, we'd been out in this, you're not supposed to go out in the hot sun. You should do what they tell you to do.
That's funny.
They started a side business, separate from the Health Wagon, that offers fillers and Botox. It's called Forever Young Aesthetics.
We actually began doing the Botox because I work and I cope by working, and the busier I am. So we actually started our Forever Young business after the death of my son.
Oh, you did?
But it also, it was fun when someone leaves you and they've had their, they all of a sudden don't look mad and they don't look angry anymore. They're happy, and it makes them feel so good about themselves. And that makes, that kind of just is a, it's kind of a hobby that we turned into a side gig.
You and Pat were the women, and, you know, we build up the women, and, you know, if we fill in lips or if we elevate cheeks, you know, with, like, fillers, or we take away wrinkles and so forth like that, it's just beautiful. I mean, they were beautiful anyway. We're not just saying that. Beautiful people here. But I think we just accent their beauty.
Coming up, why the only time in the week that Paula and Teresa go to separate places is church on Sunday morning. This episode is brought to you by Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he will chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Paula and Teresa are in their late 50s now. They each have adult children and grandchildren, and they're both married to their second husbands. So while you're going through school, you both have first marriages. Were you divorced at the same time?
We did.
Like, right around the exact same time?
Probably within a year. Year, yeah.
And there's a funny story about that,
there's
too.
There's a funny story about that. Paula, tell that one.
My husband at the time, who did say he would pull his own tooth before he'd stand in line like that, I got this call from him, and he said, are you divorcing me? And I'm like, where did this even come from? And I said, what? And he said, well, Teresa's getting a divorce. And I'm like, well, so? So I don't know if he planted the seed. I don't know what happened.
But we always do everything in unison. So, I mean, you know.
That was exactly, he said, well, Teresa's getting a divorce. And I'm like, well, it didn't have anything to do with you unless you've got a guilty conscience or something, you know? I mean,
oh, and then sure enough.
And then sure enough, we did.
Oh, so that's something you all were able to support each other through, like
all of
a sudden being unmarried moms and figuring out next steps. And then did you remarry in similar time frames?
Yes, within a year.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Like in your second marriages, I mean, you knew when you got married again that this was demanding work that you do that takes a lot of time and takes a lot of commitment.
My first husband, he often said, you know, Teresa, you you love your patients more than you love your family. And I do love my patients. I do love my family. But, I mean, it does take a toll on a marriage. I mean, the long hours and the commitment, you know, to try to lift your, you know, the people here in Appalachia out of the poverty and the healthcare crisis that they're faced with. It takes a lot of energy and resources.
We've kind of brought my husband into this. He's an attorney, and he's, I don't know if it's willingly or not, but he does a lot of pro bono stuff now.
Oh, really?
I don't know if it's willing or forced upon him, but he will come by. Like, he came by yesterday. So he's got the memo. He's got the heart. But Teresa says that I make him do free care all the time, free law stuff. Sometimes I do.
Yes, she does. Huh.
He got the memo. And so it sounds like in both of your marriages now, it's just clear this is part of your life. Your life is...
It is.
Mm-hmm. Another question. Do you currently go to church together? Do you go to the same church?
I go to a different church than Paula, but they're kind of very similar. But no, for years we attended like the same church.
And you don't go to the same church now?
Well, that's because the husband that she divorced goes to church with me, and it wasn't...
She lost the church in the divorce.
Lost the church in the divorce.
That's Teresa Owens Tyson and Paula Hill Collins. Find out more about The Health Wagon and all it does at their website, thehealthwagon.org. The new PBS documentary featuring them and many of their patients is called If Dreams Were Lightning, Crisis in Rural Healthcare. It's directed by Ramin Barani, and we've put a link in our show notes where you can watch it on YouTube. Death, Sex, and Money is produced by Slate. Please support the production of our show by becoming a member of Slate Plus. You'll not only be supporting the work of the Death, Sex, and Money team, you'll also get access to new benefits, including listening to us and all of the great shows that Slate makes, like Slow Burn and Dakota Ring, without any ads or sponsor breaks. Be a part of helping us build a solid foundation for Death, Sex, and Money at our new home by subscribing to Slate Plus. Just click Try Free at the top of the Death, Sex, and Money show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/DSM+ to get access wherever you listen. This episode was produced by Cameron Drews. The rest of the Death, Sex, and Money team is Andrew Dunn and Zoe Ajoulay. Daisy Rosario is our senior supervising producer. Alicia Montgomery is Slate's head of audio. And thanks to Lois Vossen, the executive producer of the PBS series Independent Lens, for helping make this episode happen. Our theme music is by the Reverend John DeLure and Steve Lewis. And if you are new to our show, welcome. We're glad you're here. You can find us and follow us on Instagram at Death, Sex, Money. I write a weekly newsletter you can subscribe to at annasale.substack.com. And you can reach us anytime with voice memos, pep talks, questions, critiques at our email address, deathsexmoney@slate.com. We love hearing from you. And seriously, do watch the whole documentary that Ramin and his team made. The communities and the people in it have stayed with me, including James Meters, who's the director of Harp Funeral Home in Jellico, Tennessee.
It's always hard to give up a family member. It's always hard to give up a friend. And in a rural area, these people are our friends. We know most of them. And if we don't know them personally, we know their family.
I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from Slate. Spring is the best time to start a new workout routine. It's our yearly collective warm-up. And whether you're beginning fresh after having some workout downtime or just craving a change-up in routine, Peloton's got you. With a variety of classes and lengths to choose from, even if you only have 5 minutes, Peloton has classes for you, from guided hikes, Pilates, to HIIT rides. Peloton accompanies you as you run outdoors, row, or ride at home, or strength train at the gym. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.